Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
He was loud today, wasn't he? Ladies and gentlemen, once again from New Orleans, Louisiana, this is a program about... I don't want to go all Ira Glassy on you or anything, but this is a program about forgetting and remembering.
Forgetting and remembering.
You know, for a country that admires youth so much, I'm speaking of the great United States of America, we certainly do allow ourselves, as a national community, plenty of senior moments. Case in point, it is, you know, and it is one of the great, great things about America that you can have a major city in this country almost destroyed by a disaster which later investigators found was the handiwork of malfeasance in the federal government. And the reaction, the response to that disaster was more such malfeasance, and yet not a word be spoken about it in the entire season of presidential debates 3 years later. That's a wonderful act of national amnesia, and my congratulations to all concerned. Ladies and gentlemen, some notes from listeners. Pilgrims in the Digital Wonderland, dear Harry, Naomi in San Francisco writes, can you do a more in-depth bit? About why the digital transition is going to suck so badly. I live in hilly San Francisco, she writes, and I need cable to pick up any TV stations at all. How will digital affect folks who don't have cable in hilly, metropolitan, or rural areas? I've noticed bad effects already, she writes. The picture and sound are not synced. That's right. 50 years of fine analog television, and we're finally being ushered into a world where picture and sound are not in sync. The digital wonderland. She continues, breaks up into squares and sometimes freezes for minutes. All the websites I've found talk about how great it will be and minimize the problems. Where can I get real information about the consequences? And I want to know what will become of all the newly freed frequencies. The answer to the latter is they were originally supposed to be auctioned off for emergency use, police, fire. Now I think some of them have been auctioned off for 3G phone uses. But wait, there'll be more auctions, and or fire sales, as we'll call them. And also, another listener, David, 18 months ago, I bought a digital TV along with the highest-rated antenna I could find. I live in Manhattan, less than 2 miles from the Empire State Building, where the transmitters are located. I can see that building from my apartment. Despite this, the touchiness of the digital signal is unbelievable. If the sky is simply overcast, I start getting chattering or frozen reception. In a rainstorm, I can count on getting a no-signal message and a blank screen. I frequently must switch over to analog to continue watching a program. If I have this much trouble under these conditions, what will people out in the country do? When some of these folks plug in their adapter boxes in February, they're going to have one rude awakening. The cable companies must be licking their chops, he writes. I do not want cable, so I'm considering just watching what I can get via the Internet after February. David, ladies and gentlemen. The digital wonderland, it beckons. Come on. Come on. Don't be scared. Don't be... So, following up on a couple of other pieces of information shared with you recently, you may be aware a few weeks ago that the military commission, in the first of the military commission trials down Gitmo way, found Salim Hamdan, Osama bin Laden's driver, that's right, the worst of the worst. Well, he's a bad driver. Guilty, but basically gave him, I think, 8 months in addition to the time he'd already served, which was regarded as a rebuke to the Bush administration. Well, the Bush administration does not take these rebukes sitting down. It's seeking to call back the military jury that gave that light sentence to the driver, arguing that the judge should not have credited the defendant for the time he'd already spent in Gitmo. He had spent, of course, years. Government argues he was not entitled to any credit for his pretrial detention because he was not held at Gitmo in connection with the charges for which he was tried, but was independently detained under the law of armed conflict as an enemy combatant. That distinction allows the government, say, military prosecutors to hold any detainee even after he's been tried, convicted, sentenced, and fully served his time. Prosecution of violation of the laws of war is an incidental fact, says the government, to a detainee's wartime detention as an enemy combatant. So they'd like to keep the driver in jail forever because drivers can talk. And, ladies and gentlemen, the National Park Service is updating a design plan to, or is developing a design plan to update the Potomac Park levee system. What? A levee system in Washington, D.C.? Oh, that place must be built on a swamp. Who would do that? After the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers warned that the 70-year-old levee, they don't warn levees, is at risk of failing during a major storm and could flood downtown D.C. with up to 10 feet of water. But that's okay. You'll never hear about it during the forthcoming presidential debates after that happens. Bank on it. Hello, welcome to the show. Remembering Levi Stubbs on today's edition of the show from the shores of Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you to this edition of the broadcast in a glorious analog, except in the city. By the way, remember a few weeks ago I opined about the alleged crock that I believe HD radio to be and had said about a year ago I had asked anybody who was listening on the HD feed of any stations around the country to write in, just hold their hands up electronically, and nobody did. But this year I did it again and offered a free copy of Songs of the Bushmen, my new CD, thank you for asking, to anybody who did. And it's amazing. Either HD radio has experienced a massive spike in newfound popularity or bribing actually does work. In any case, thanks to everybody who wrote in, who are listening on HD. How clear do I sound? Yeah, that's what I thought. And now, ladies and gentlemen, News from outside the bubble. It's high definition. Except it doesn't mean that. It's just, you know, like a high-definition toaster. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, from The Guardian, a former head of MI5, the spy agency in Great Britain, says something that I don't think anybody in this country would dare say. Stay tuned. He describes the response to the 9/11 attacks in the United States as a, quote, huge overreaction. He also says the invasion of Iraq influenced young men in Britain to turn to terrorism. In an exclusive interview with The Guardian, Stella Rimington, former head of MI5, calls al-Qaeda's attack on the U.S., quote, another terrorist incident, unquote, but not qualitatively different from any others. That's not how it struck me. I suppose I'd lived with terrorist events for a good part of my working life, she says, and this is, as far as I was concerned, another one, end quote. In common with Dame Eliza Mannington Butler, who retired as MI5's director general last year. Well, if the gals are spies, what hope do we have? No, just kidding. Rimington, who left MI5 12 years ago, has already made it clear she abhorred the war on terror rhetoric. And now she goes further by criticizing politicians for trying to outbid each other in their opposition to terrorism and making national security a partisan issue. Well, thank God that doesn't happen here. National security has become much more of a political issue than it ever was before 9/11, she says. Parties are tending to use it as a way of trying to get at the other side. You know, we're more tough on terrorism than you are. I think that's a bad move, quite frankly. Rimington mentions Gitmo, the practice of extraordinary rendition, and the invasion of Iraq, three issues which the majority of Britain's security and intelligence establishment opposed privately at the time. Really? The intelligence establishment? Interesting. She challenges claims, notably made by Tony Blair, that the war in Iraq was not related to the radicalization of Muslim youth in Britain. Asked what impact the war had on the terrorist threat, she replies, well, I think all one can do is look at what those people who've been arrested or have left suicide videos say about their motivation. And most of them say that the war in Iraq played a significant part in persuading them that this is the right course of action to take. But wait, there's more. But that's all from the former head of MI5. Interesting. Oh, that's interesting, too. Now, ladies and gentlemen, from The Guardian also, Mother Nature appears to have blessed Cuba with enough oil reserves to vault it into the ranks of energy powers. Have you heard about this anywhere else? I haven't. The government announced there may be more than 20 billion barrels of recoverable oil in offshore fields in Cuba's share of the Gulf of Mexico, more than twice the previous estimate. If confirmed, it puts Cuba's reserves on a par with those of the United States. Yeah, but we got more sugar. And into the world's top 20, drilling is expected to start next year by Cuba's state oil company, CUPET. Isn't that cute? CUPET. It would change their whole equation. The government would have more money and no longer be dependent on foreign oil, says Kirby Jones, founder of the Washington-based U.S.-Cuba Trade Association. Havana based its dramatically higher estimate mainly on comparisons with oil output from similar geological structures off the coast of Mexico and the U.S. Cuba's undersea geology is very similar to Mexico's giant Cantarell oil field in the Bay of Campeche. Well, congratulations to Cuba on the oil. Now we'll see that trade embargo end. Excuse me, I understand you've got some oil. Oh, more? Yes, there's more news from outside the bubble. Sure, because the bubble's getting bigger. So there's more news outside it. From the Sunday Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch, a government report in Britain that found old-fashioned reusable diapers damage the environment more than disposables has been hushed up because government officials are embarrassed by its findings. The Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, DEFRA, has instructed civil servants not to publicize the conclusions of the $100,000 diaper research project and to adopt a defensive stance towards its conclusions. The report found that using washable diapers hailed by city governments throughout Britain as a key way of saving the planet has a higher carbon footprint than using the disposable equivalents unless parents adopt an extreme approach to laundering them. Extreme diaper laundering, this week on Spike! To reduce the impact of cloth diapers on climate change, parents would have to hang wet diapers out to dry all year round. Keep them for years for use on younger children. And make sure the water in their washing machines does not exceed 60 degrees centigrade. Yeah, I'm sure you know how hot that is. The conclusions will upset proponents of cloth diapers who have claimed they can help save the planet. Or at least keep it dry. Back to The Guardian, financial workers at Wall Street's top banks had received pay deals worth more than $70 billion, a substantial proportion of which is expected to be paid in discretionary bonuses for their work so far this year. Hey, well done. Another mission accomplished, despite the fact that they plunged global financial system into the worst crisis since 1929. The Guardian has learned this. Staff at six banks, including Goldman Sachs and Citigroup, are in line to pick up the payouts, despite being the beneficiaries of that billions of bailout money from the U.S. Treasury, seven times more than was promised to New Orleans. The government's cash has been poured in on the condition that excessive executive pay would be curbed. Pay plans for bankers have been disclosed in recent corporate statements. Pressure on the U.S. firms to review preparations for annual bonuses increased this week when Germany's Deutsche Bank said many of its leading traders would join its chief executive in waiving millions of euros in annual payouts. Yeah, but see, they get paid in euros. I'd waive those, too. I'd want dollars, like these guys get. The sums that continue to be spent by Wall Street firms on payroll payoffs and, most controversially, bonuses appear to bear no relation to the losses suffered by investors in the banks. At one point last week, the Morgan Stanley $10.7 billion pay pot for the year to date was greater than the entire stock market valuation of Morgan Stanley. In effect, staff on receiving their bonuses and salaries could club together and buy the bank. It's nice to. By the way, the New York Times reported last week that when Henry Paulson was cobbling together this plan to buy stock in banks, he was lobbied vigorously by representatives of the banking industry, imploring him not to put in any kind of regulation or limitation on the salaries and bonuses of said bankers. So, you know, they got their eyes on the ball, ladies and gentlemen. They know what they're doing. They're not, they haven't lost the plot. They haven't forgotten. Because it's a show about forgetting. I have to nail the theme every once in a while. And now,
he's not a general. He commands no troops. He's not an inspector. He peeks at no stoops. He's an inspector general. Oh, yeah.
News of inspectors general. Ladies and gentlemen, the Pentagon's missile defense program has already cost $100 billion in strained relations with the Russians. It has yet to prove its real-world value. Hitting a bullet with a bullet is a typical enough task. But a new report reveals the Pentagon is even having problems launching the practice targets needed to test the system. Until now, the military has relied on relics, some of them 40-year-old rockets, to launch its test targets, and that has led to a growing number of failed tests. The Government Accountability Office, Inspector General of the Congress, reports that the rate of target failure rose from 7% between 2002 and 2005 to 16% in two most recent years. The Pentagon can't shoot a fake warhead out of the sky if the rocket designed to put it there fails to do its job. Even more distressing, the Pentagon's Missile Defense Agency appears to be bungling a $1 billion program to develop a new generation of test targets. The Pentagon hired Lockheed to build several kinds of new test target missiles to help perfect the system. The GAO says while the test, which incoming missiles used between 2002 and 2006, cost an average of $6.5 million, those slated for use over the next 2 years are only going to cost $48.5 million apiece. Some of the cost increase results in the Pentagon's need to make sure that its tests better reflect an evolving threat, particularly the use of balloons and other decoys that would be used by a real incoming missile to evade interception. All they need to use is balloons? Why don't we just get nuclear balloons? But the GAO says much of the true cost growth is due to unstable designs and the decision to build the new missiles without a formal cost analysis. Why would you want that? The Pentagon paid hourly labor rates that were 32% higher once Lockheed took control of the program. The magnitude of the increase, says the GAO, exceeded expectations. The Pentagon's difficulty in supplying targets is driven by diminishing sources for components, unanticipated costs, problems incorporating requirements into contracts and establishing program baselines, and the lack of a sound business case for its current approach to supplying targets. Many of the rocket builders who'd been selling their wares directly to the Pentagon are leaving the market due to a lack of business. Two recent tests have gone astray due to what the GAO calls target anomalies. In September, the target missile malfunctioned and did not have enough momentum to reach the intercept area. So they already knew where the missile was going to intercept the target. There was a place called the intercept area. These are good tests, ladies and gentlemen. These are good real-world tests. Missile defense probed by the Inspector General of Congress, the GAO. Developmental problems have also risen in the new family of targets, leading to cost growth, delayed flight tests, and deferral of several key capabilities. Rush to meet urgent need caused more delays, says the GAO. Well, what are you supposed to do? Speed up or slow down? What do you want? And President Bush, this week in another one of his famous signing statements, in which he signs a bill into law and then says, not really, he now says he has executive power to bypass several parts of a law that would give Inspector General greater independence from White House control. Well, of course he would. He's in the White House, isn't he? Bush signed the measure into law, but he issued the signing statement in which he instructed the executive branch to view parts as unconstitutional constraints on presidential power. Two sections that strengthen legal protections against political interference with the IGs. One section gives the Inspector General a right to counsels, lawyers, who report directly to them. Bush wrote in the signing statement, such lawyers would be bound to follow the legal interpretations of the politically appointed lawyers at the agencies the inspectors general are investigating. You see. The other section requires the White House to tell Congress what each inspector general said about the administration's budget proposal for their offices. Such a requirement, Mr. Bush wrote, would infringe on the president's constitutional authority to decide what to recommend to Congress. News of the inspectors general and what would be done to them. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast. The big news today, of course, among the big news stories, is Colin Powell's announcement on Meet the Press that he is endorsing Senator Barack Obama in the presidential election. And it's being treated as big news, as I say. And Colin Powell is being treated as the endorsement is being treated as important because of Colin Powell's alleged status as a trusted, credible, respected person in the national community, which suggests that a great act of national amnesia has taken place, ladies and gentlemen. Colin Powell, when he was Secretary of State, actually had an intelligence agency in his department. Department of State has its own intelligence agency. It's called the Bureau of Investigation Research. It's BNR is the initials for it. And a member, a high-ranking member of that agency, Greg Thielman, actually went public in the days before the war saying, whatever you, the American public, are being told about what the intelligence shows is not true. I happen to know that. Because he was seeing the intelligence in the State Department's own intelligence unit. Nonetheless, Colin Powell ignored his own intelligence unit inside his own State Department to get diddled by George Tenet and then pass the diddling on to us in that United Nations speech, which he still has not really repudiated. So my first question to Colin Powell, endorsing Barack Obama, a week after endorsing the reputation for honesty of Senator Ted Stevens under on trial for corruption. By the way, Governor Palin, should we vote for Ted Stevens? My question for Colin Powell is, does Barack Obama have mobile bioweapons vans? Colin Powell on Meet the Press, ladies and gentlemen. Just one more smooth move.
I had a doctrine. It had my name. Overwhelming force. That was my game. But I played with the grown-ups. And it wasn't the same. They snapped a big towel at the doctrine of Powell. Thank God I still had my smooth moves. I could write a book, and maybe I will. I was trained to lead young people to kill. But when I say follow me, lately they don't. There's that book I could write, but maybe I won't. But I tell myself, Colin, you just keep on rolling with those smooth moves. Just laying down those grandma's grooves. No matter what the intel proves, all I needed was my smooth moves. You know, I wanted the White House, but my wife told me no. So pimping for war was as far as I'd go. I served my country, some doctor didn't tell. I was most trusted, then I poisoned my well. But I tell myself, Colin, you just keep on rolling with those smooth moves. Trying not to hear history's hooves. Just as long as the boss approves, I keep laying down those smooth moves. Strategy, we knew that by rote, but the grown-up said, hey, just hold our coat. Thank God I still had my smooth moves.
She would bring. Now I've lost it.
This is Le Show, the program that asks the question, if coffee grounds are an added advantageous feature in coffee ice cream, why are they an impurity in coffee? Ladies and gentlemen, let's get scared. New data has revealed that the heliosphere, the protective shield of energy that surrounds our solar system, and thanks for that, by the way, has weakened by 25% over the past decade. It's now at its lowest level since the space race began, when I guess we first became aware there was such a thing as the heliosphere. Scientists, according to the Telegraph in London, are baffled by what could be causing the barrier to shrink in this way. Why should we care? The interstellar medium, which is part of the galaxy as a whole, is quite a harsh environment, says Nathan Schwadron, co-investigator on a project to investigate the situation. There is a very high-energy galactic radiation that is dangerous to living things. Around 90% of the galactic cosmic radiation is deflected by our heliosphere. The boundary protects us from this harsh galactic environment. The heliosphere is created by the solar wind, a combination of electrically charged particles and magnetic fields that emanate more than 1,000,000 miles an hour from the sun. They meet the intergalactic gas that fills the gaps in space between solar systems. At that boundary, where they meet is a shockwave that deflects the interstellar radiation around the solar system away from us. Without the heliosphere, the harmful intergalactic cosmic rays would make life on Earth almost impossible, almost like working at SNL, by destroying DNA, that's what I mean, and making the climate uninhabitable. Ooh, the heliosphere. Well, maybe that's what's crapping everything up. Maybe it's... I really don't know, obviously. But, you know, I am on the radio, so that means I do know, doesn't it? Ladies and gentlemen, good news from Iraq. The U.S. military is planning a large operation over the next 3 years. Not a military operation. Not a, well, there will be a pullout. Apparently, according to today's independent newspaper, they've agreed on a pullout by 2011. I hadn't heard that, but I guess they are. But anyway, what kind of an operation is the U.S. planning? In Iraq, polling and focus grouping? They are becoming like us. Interesting. The purpose, to help build robust and positive relations with the people of Iraq and to assist the Iraqi people in forming a new government. It's $15 million a year. That's a bargain that will supplement the military's $100 million a year propaganda operation. Oh, I'm sorry, strategic communications, which aims to produce content for Iraqi media that will engage and inspire the population. I'm engaged and inspired just reading those words. The proposed polling contract, which is yet to be awarded, the line forms right behind me, babe. Don't get any ideas. Ahmad, what do you think of General Petraeus? Would centralize activities currently conducted by four different commands. The fact that the polls and focus groups are financed by the U.S. military might not be revealed to participants. The contract prohibits the contractor from disclosing any aspect of the work performed under this contract, including the identity of the sponsor, unless approved by the military. It's the same as with the propaganda operation, I guess. It'll provide an extraordinary amount of data, says a former government official with experience in polling. The expansion of military involvement in such activities, which were once the province of the State Department, thank you, Colin Powell, is raising concerns inside the Defense Department. But as long as we're doing polling, that's what counts. Because they are so reliable. Especially if you call them at dinner time. Call the Iraqis at dinner time. That's going to be my plan. Yes, here Patrick Coburn in the Independent says, Iraq and the United States have finally agreed on a security pact, which would mean the U.S. forces would withdraw from Iraq by 2011, American and Iraqi officials say. So we'll withdraw all the troops with bayonets and just keep the ones with computer inputting devices for those, you know, because they don't use notepads anymore. They'll still be there. And now, ladies and gentlemen, another copyrighted feature. News of the Warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. listen to the war.
Maybe it's the heliosphere, but this is the award-winning news of the warm. Half to three-quarters of the major Antarctic penguin colonies could be damaged or wiped out if global temperatures are allowed to climb by more than 2 degrees Celsius, 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit. A 2-degree hike would threaten 50% of the breeding grounds of emperor penguins, and they are good eating, so... Oh, I'm sorry. And 75% of adult penguin colonies, says the study released by the World Wildlife Fund. The United Nations panel, of course, says 2-degree temperature rise is possible, maybe even probable by century's end. A reduction in the sea ice is also likely to have a knock-on effect on the abundance of krill, and that is good eating, which is a vital food source for penguins. Penguins are very well adapted to living in the cold and extreme conditions of Antarctica, says the WWF's spokesperson. Warming has already contributed to a reduction in populations. But we'll still have the movies with penguins. We'll still have the animated penguins. And, you know, in a way, ladies and gentlemen, they are cuter. Really, you know, so... And cuteness in considering the fate of animals is, as you know, all important. One greenhouse effect is welcome. The roofs of hothouse farms in Spain reflect so much sunlight they may be pushing down local temperatures, reports the New Scientist. Since the 1970s, semi-arid pasture land in Almeria, southeastern Spain, has been replaced by greenhouse horticulture. Yes, you can. Lead. Now, Almeria has the largest expanse of greenhouses in the world, around 26,000 hectares. Okay, now I'm totally lost. Pablo Campra of the University of Almeria and colleagues studied temperature trends from weather stations inside the region and other areas of Spain. They compared semi-arid pasture land and greenhouses, looking for difference in surface radiation and the ability to reflect sunlight. In the greenhouse region, air temperature has cooled by an average of half a degree Fahrenheit per decade since the 1980s. In the rest of Spain, it has risen by almost a full degree in that period. Greenhouses are far more reflective than farmland. This is another vote for the white roof theory. Paint your roof white. Tell them I said to. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. It's well known that, at least this week, that Senator Obama has outraised Senator McCain in terms of fundraising and is outspending him on television commercials by a 4-to-1 ratio. This program is about, if nothing else, about fairness. So here's one for free, John.
There's only one real issue in this presidential campaign, and yet, my friends, my opponent has said not one word about it throughout this campaign. That word, my friends, is friends. My friends, some politicians think they're better than the rest of us, better than, say, Joe the Plumber. Looking down on him, my friends, because he may not have completed the proper paperwork for the government. But my friends, people like Joe the Plumber know one thing about me. I consider you all my friends. I couldn't call you my friends if I didn't mean it. And if that's not in the campaign finance reform law I already passed, it will be in the next one. My friends, you can take that to the bank, the one I helped bail out.
Ask Barack Obama if he considers you one of his friends. If he does, why doesn't he say so?
I'm John McCain, and my friends, I approve this message.
Just walk away and then you won't see me follow you back.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
With apologies to the Daily Beast website, run by Tina Brown, which stole this feature. I'm going to continue with it. For a little bit longer. Even though some say that's the surest sign you should stop. It gets stolen by Tina Brown. Ladies and gentlemen, appearing on CBS Late Show with David Letterman Thursday, John McCain apologized for skipping out on a scheduled visit in September that Letterman later made the subject of an ongoing joke. I screwed up, McCain told Letterman more than once. He also apologized to Joe the Plumber for the disruption of Joe the Plumber's privacy. Joe the Plumber, ladies and gentlemen. Before the typical banter at the start of halftime of the Georgia Tech-Clemson game, ESPN's host Rhys Davis gave the microphone to Lou Holtz for an awkward apology. Without being specific, Lou Holtz said he was sorry. Holtz, former football coach, said he was sorry for comments he had made in reference to Michigan coach Rich Rodriguez. A quick Google search revealed Holtz had said that, quote, Hitler was a great leader too, unquote. Earlier this year, ESPN suspended Jameel Hill, a columnist who compared rooting for the Celtics to rooting for Hitler. The Hitler thing always works. FEMA tells Fox 26 in Houston that as many as 1,000 hurricane victims in Houston may have had their personal information exposed to a stranger. The agency says an error by its mailing subcontractor placed one person's aid application under a cover page addressed to another person. Each subsequent envelope in the batch was improperly stuffed. FEMA has apologized to the people involved and offered them a year of free credit monitoring. Probably not from freecreditreport.com because those aren't free. It's true. That's why they call it that. Representative Tim Mahoney of Florida held a press conference this week apologizing for the embarrassment his actions have caused his family and denying he violated his oath of office or any laws. I would have come forward earlier, but making sure my family is okay is far more important than any political career, Mahoney said, accompanied by his wife. I have not violated my oath of office, nor have I violated any laws. I consider this to be a private matter. This is because he's had an affair. Mahoney replaced Mark Foley. Google him if you've forgotten. It's about forgetting and remembering. The latest newsletter by an Inland Empire in California Republican women's group depicts Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama surrounded by a watermelon, ribs, and a bucket of fried chicken, prompting outrage in political circles. The October newsletter says if Obama is elected, his image will appear on food stamps instead of dollar bills like other presidents. The statement is followed by an illustration of Obama Bucks, a phony $10 bill featuring Obama's face on a donkey's body, labeled United States food stamps. The Inland Empire Women's Group sent out a newsletter showing this food stamp, sent to about 200 members and associates of the group by email and regular mail, drawing harsh criticism from members of the political group, elected leaders, party officials, and others as racist. The group's president, Diana Fidel, said she plans to send an apology letter to her members and to apologize at the club's meeting. She said she simply wanted to deride a comment Obama made over the summer about how, as an African-American, he doesn't look like all those other presidents on the dollar bills. It was strictly an attempt to point out the outrageousness of his statement. I don't really want to go into it any further, Fidel said in a telephone interview. I absolutely apologize to anyone who was offended. That clearly wasn't my attempt. She also said she doesn't think in racist terms. I didn't see it that way that it's being taken. I never connected. It was just food to me. It doesn't mean anything else. She wasn't trying to make a statement linking Obama and food stamps. Although her introductory statement made it appear that she did. Also on the race beat, Pennsylvania Representative John Murtha, a supporter of Obama, apologized this week for calling Western Pennsylvania, quote, a racist area, unquote. In a statement from his office, Representative Murtha apologized for those comments. While we cannot deny that race is a factor in this election, I believe we've been able to look beyond race these past few months and that voters today are concerned with the policy differences of our two candidates. Senator Obama has shown sound judgment, Papa. Murtha's apology came after the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette posted a story on its website that quotes the veteran Democratic congressman as saying, quote, no question that Western Pennsylvania is a racist area. And in a statement later that day, a Murtha spokesman defended the remarks, telling the Associated Press it's naive to think that race or gender doesn't play a role in a voter's perception of a candidate. My personal choice for the apology would have been to say, when I said it was a racist area, I meant the land, not the people. Sure, it would stick. Tourism officials have apologized to authorities in China after Drug Enforcement Administration agents in Saipan subjected scores of Chinese tourists to intensive body searches at Saipan International Airport nearly 2 weeks ago. Governor Benigno Fitial also vowed action to prevent such incidents in the future, or at least to make them nicer body searches. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. It is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, of course, the big news this week in a lot of homes, probably Joe the Plumber's, has been the economy, and particularly focus on the stock market. You may remember Monday, or you may remember last week, it dropped disastrously, or let's say seriously, let's say interestingly. And then this past Monday, it had this historic 900-point rise. And, you know, people started saying, well, maybe the worst is over. And then, of course, it spent the rest of the week going down and kind of going up and down, but basically down. Which brought to mind a lovely turn of phrase that I've heard more than once from people who style themselves experts on Wall Street and the economy, that what we saw on Monday, that big bounce back, that big spike in the middle of what appears to be a period of downward motion in the stock market, is known by the felicitous phrase, a dead cat bounce. It sounds so contemporary and yet so retro.
Hard to shake free of our cares. Couldn't buy my car on credit. Baby was selling her shares.
Ooh, baby.
Guys in suits were on my TV, meeting just to say they met. Then, just when it seemed the darkest, here comes the best news yet. They were doing the dead cat bounce, just watching the big bulls pounce. When only one day counts, that's when you do the dead cat bounce. Well, 2 days later we were sliding right back into the hole. Red arrows pointed downward, warnings blacker than coal. You know, baby was pruning her Christmas list. eBay had my guitar. Sure didn't feel like dancing till we heard this noise from afar. They were doing the dead cat bounce, stocks rising obscene amounts. Only in my dream accounts could we do the dead cat bounce. One day wonders and shooting stars, instant karma and mini bars. Now it's here, now it's gone. Only thing growing is my neighbor's lawn. Now I'm scuffling for groceries, baby's hooking for rent. The checks they say were in the mail, but the mail was never sent.
Oh, baby.
You can bounce a dead cat forever, but it's only gonna go up once. Everybody's a genius till everybody's a dunce. They were doing the dead cat bounce, sipping deep from fantasy's founts. They were buying hope by the ounce. They were doing the dead cat bounce. Let's all do the dead cat bounce. Sad reality, we'll all trounce. Even while the misery mounts, we'll be doing the dead cat. The dead cat. The dead cat bounce.
Burn it down.
ladies and gentlemen, why Sarah Palin speaks the way she does. Visual evidence now at MyDamnChannel.com. And November 1st, Songs of the Bushmen live in New York City at the 92nd Street Y Tribeca. I know it's New York, but make your travel plans now. That's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe and the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin, east and west. Well, it's all one now. We're all friends. Ask the Vietnamese. On Sirius and XM satellite radio, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available as a free download for members at www.audible.com/the show, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like Colin Powell getting his credibility back, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much, uh-huh. My thanks to the folks at the Virginia Avenue Project in Santa Monica for their very nice honor. The email address for this broadcast is available, along with playlists of the music heard here, at the always evolving harryshearer.com. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego, Chicago, Pittsburgh, and Hawaii desks, and to Pam Halstead. And to Jenny Lawson at WWNO-FM in New Orleans for making today's shows possible, even though it's only carried on their HD thingy. Hey, HD listeners in New Orleans. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from autumnal New Orleans.